Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. I have Simon Clancy here, and I have Chris Coughlin here. For those of you that were very concerned last week, sending me very cryptic emails, is everything okay? Did you guys have a falling out? No, we did not. You know, we have schedules, and Chris likes to gallivant about the country this time of year. He did the same thing last year. And Simon likes to go to Russia every once in a while, or Japan, or, you know, go to a football
game. That's very true.
In Eastern Europe. But
I had a falling out. I had a falling out with myself.
Oh, really?
With myself, that's it.
Okay. But we're all here. Well, that was an interesting game yesterday, guys. I found myself extremely angry, and then just like that Alonzo Mourning meme that's been made very popular on Twitter, where he's shaking his head in disbelief, and then all of a sudden he recognizes, you know, this is not such a bad thing. That loss essentially put picking 10th, 11th, or 12th completely out to bed while it was in play as they were winning the game. Of course, I didn't like how the game ended, but who cares? That improves their draft position. Brian Flores blew a gasket. Your thoughts on how it ended, Simon? I know you had some thoughts on that.
Yeah, I thought it was. I did think it was pass interference. I thought Needham actually played all right in the game, and feels a little bit like a bit of a keeper for next season. Mm-hmm. But I do think he had his arm around the receiver's neck a little bit too early. It's a bang bang play, but he is there too soon. I think if we were on the other end of it, I think we'd have been disappointed if that hadn't been called and it was us on offense. I thought they played pretty well. I think the red zone struggles were obvious. I thought Fitzpatrick missed a few throws, specifically to Gesicki. Obviously, it's more difficult when you lose Albert Wilson and you lose Devontae. Mm. But, you know, you saw guys like Isaiah Ford step up. You know, Mac Hollins was pushing, was threatening deep. I thought Patrick Laird had a really good game and already looks like sort of a one of those New England backs that they've had for the last 20 years, really. Underachieving little white fellas who can run the ball, can, you know, catch his ball out of the backfield, make plays on special teams, have names like the intern, will just do it all, really. So good for him. I thought the offensive line was hot trash.
They're so scrappy.
Oh, yeah, he's a little scrappy little fella.
Gym rats.
Exactly. Yeah. And look, the kicker had a tremendous game. It was unfortunate for him that Matt Hawk dropped the field goal, the snap that would have, you know, potentially would have made his eighth kick of the game. You never know how these games work out. If that kick had gone through, who knows what happened. But, you know, I thought they played hard. And look, I'm in an interesting situation now because the tour injuries kind of clouded everything. Wins seem a little more joyous, perhaps, than they did, you know, 6, 7, 8 weeks ago, because there's so much up in the air, and you know, it's clear that Tua isn't going to go one. Looks like the Giants will pick two at the moment, and they've got their quarterback. Feels like Chase Young is going to be their pick. And the teams that we kind of worried a little bit about, Washington, feel like Dwayne Haskins has been 2-2 the last couple of weeks, almost pulled off a win in Lambeau yesterday without playing brilliantly. But it feels like, you know, they're kind of, you know, he needs some skill, especially, you know, to complement McLaurin. So it really depends on, you know, where Miami end up and how that hip is. But I don't feel as bad about cheering for wins as I did early on in the season. But I thought they played well. And look, I said it on Twitter last night, I think it's an extraordinary coaching job that's being done by Flores and his team. They've been pretty close in a few games. And, you know, I was adamant that this lot were going to be 0-16 and maybe 1-15. And I've taken the L on this. And I think mainly because, you know, the coaching job has been so good given the XFL roster that he's working with.
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought that 3-13, 5-11 was in play before they traded everybody. When they traded everybody, I said, yeah, 0-16 is absolutely right there in the cards. And I've been shocked by the way that they've played. They've been competitive basically since week 6. They've been a legitimate football team since week 6. Chris, your thoughts?
Well, first off, I did think that was interference, and I, like Simon said, if we were on the other side of it, we'd be loud in our protests about about that.
Yeah, but let me ask you this, Chris, quickly, and then you can get on with your point. Don't you think it's weird that they review this in slow motion? Like, life doesn't happen in slow motion. Like, interference is interference in real life, not in slow motion when you could, you know, look for every single nuance.
You either make it reviewable or you don't. I mean, they've made pass interference reviewable, so you review it. And they have a set of standards that they – I mean, listen, they don't turn these over, these pass interference calls. Somehow Miami has managed to get two of them turned over, which baffles me because the rest of the league can't get any of them turned over. Yeah, I think if it's the reason he didn't catch the ball and you interfered with him and grabbed him around the neck, turned his shoulder a little bit, then, yeah, it's pass interference. So first off, there's that. I do think that wasn't as bad as some people perceived it. But the other thing is the season and the fact that they've won three games and maybe we'll win some more. We'll see. They've lost Devontae Parker now. I think it's a lesson in not overreacting to things because, I mean, you know, prior to the very end of the preseason, sort of when all the shenanigans really began, you know, we were talking about how good coaches don't lose, you know, 14, 15 or 16 games. Right. Mm-hmm. And if Miami is hiring the people that they really think truly believe are going to lead them to the Super Bowl, then that is at complete odds with the sort of underpaying the roster tanking thing. And because they sort of balance with each other a little bit. Yeah. You've got a really vastly underpaid roster. But at the same time, if you've hired all these coaches that have these Super Bowl rings and championship rings, which they do, then you're probably going to win some games. So, but then that got thrown for, so we were kind of like consistent about that. And then it got really thrown for a loop because right on the eve of the season, they trade Laremy Tunsil. They turned over, or they also traded Kiko Alonso and cut several of the veterans that got rid of several of the veterans we thought they might get rid of, but we didn't really know. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the Minkah Fitzpatrick thing starts taking hold. They turned over more than a quarter of the roster right before the season started and then started playing all those guys, which is like immediately, which is kind of ridiculous. You never see that happen. And so we're like, wow, the tank really is in. They've done it. They've succeeded. They've gone further than anybody else has gone before. They're going to go 0-16. They're the worst team, one of the worst teams in league history. That's how they started the year. But that was an overreaction. You know, that was an overreaction to those, you know, last couple of moves. And the reality is we're back to good coaches don't lose 14, 15, 16 games. And
so that's Cam Cameron.
Yeah, well, that's the reality, right? I mean, we're saying they won three games because they've done a really good job coaching, and you see, actually, it's really marvelous to try and watch these games and see how the success of these plays that are helping us win these games are helping to keep us competitive. The success of these plays really only keys on, you know, a couple of players succeeding, you know, like it doesn't have to be all 11 the way the Dolphins are playing right now on offense and on defense, fortunate as it is, because we don't have good 11 players on any given play. So it's funky to watch, but yeah, they're doing a good job coaching and they're competing and stuff like that. But clearly this was not a good team though that played on Sunday. No. Dolphins, and clearly this was not a good team that they faced, the Jets.
Yeah, the Jets and this was terrible.
This was a battle of bumblers, and that's what I saw, and we'll see how it goes forward, because now that they've lost Devontae Parker, that could be a semi big deal, because he had just kind of come into his own, and we'll see if that affects whether they can actually pull off wins against even the bad teams that they're facing, like the Giants.
And now it's two wide receivers. It's Devontae Parker and Albert Wilson, both concussion protocol.
Yeah.
There's only 3 weeks left. So
They're going to shut them down, right?
You got to figure they're not going to play anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so, Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if two more wins, and that's what we handicapped, if they're you know, if that's possible.
Well, I thought three, two and a half to three, you know, like I was.
And it's increasingly clear that the Patriots are going to absolutely need that last game because they're dropping like a rock. They're going to need that game to even keep pace for the three seed. So, you know, and speaking of the Patriots, pretty interesting story, Chris. You have the details of it because it's even better the more you read on it.
I don't have too many of the details. I just know that, like, you know, the Patriots are caught videotaping again, which is the greatest the greatest thing ever. But from what I know, just to recap very briefly, the Bengals scouts were in the press box for the Bengals-Browns games. They were in the Browns stadium. Evidently, a Patriots videographer just, like, comes in to the press box with his camera and just sets up his tripod right next to the Bengals scouts and just starts filming the field. And the Bengals are like, the hell, we play the Patriots next week. What are you? He's got these big, like, Patriots emblems all over the place. It's like living inside of a Twitter meme. I mean, like what is going on here? And so they reported it, and the staffers came down, and they confiscated his SD card. And the Patriots claim that they got permission from the Browns to do this, and that it was a team-sponsored puff piece called Do Your Job, and it's supposed to be following one of their pro scouts, their advanced scouts, and just, like, filming him and filming, you know, his job, what he's doing. But it's like they were filming the field, clearly, which is why the Bengals scouts were upset, or, you know, reported it in the first place. So this is going to be fun to look at, because they did not get permission from the league to do that. And they definitely did not get permission from the Bengals to do it. So
I can tell you this at Hard Rock Stadium, at the farthest end press box, which is right on the end zone, there's a sign that says you may not film or photograph the field during play. Okay. And that press box is loaded with advanced scouts. There's guys there from the Chiefs, from the Jaguars, from everywhere, from the Patriots. So it's commonplace to have them in and around the game on game day, you know, and you can pick up a lot by watching the entire field. But at practice, and the guy's wearing his emblem, and then he decides to start filming practice, like, that's hilarious.
Especially it was during the game, but
it was the game. It wasn't practice.
Oh, it wasn't practice. It was
the game.
Yeah, it was the game on Sunday.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
And you know, there's so much tape of the game itself. You, like, why do you, even if you're filming for this puff piece, like, why do you need, you can get the tape of the game if you need to splice that in to your puff piece about the pro scout, right?
But also, wasn't he filming, didn't he set up his camera on the sideline as well and start filming the Bengals coaches and their signals?
Well, that's what the Bengals were worried about. But I didn't hear about him actually being on the sidelines. I heard that he had set up his tripod in the press box and was filming the field, which would include the Bengals sidelines and scouts and stuff, or coaches, sorry. So, I mean, that's seriously, like, why would you do that if you're the team that got caught?
That team's got significantly bigger problems than filming Bengals. I mean, and frankly, who needs to film the Bengals offense?
I know, exactly.
Like, although I will tell you this. The way the Bengals offense is playing, they better start filming them, because that Patriot defense has to basically pitch shutouts to win games now. They have to basically hand the ball over to their offense at the 20-yard line over and over just so they could score points to keep pace.
And the offense is bad, isn't it?
Oh, it's awful. Tom Brady – well – I'm going to say the obvious. Tom Brady is bad, and he's just bad this year.
I don't know if that's true. I don't think I think those receivers generally without Julian Edelman, or excepting Julian Edelman, he's having a real problem.
Missing people by 5-6 yards is not a receiver problem.
No run game. Sony Michel being injured, and the most fascinating thing has got to be what happens at the end of the season. You know, because he's a free agent, and it looks pretty obvious that the Patriots aren't going to sign him to a new contract. You know, Don Yee, his agent's talked about the fact that, you know, he wants to be paid commensurate with the best quarterbacks in the NFL, given what he's done. And the Patriots, you know, with the greatest respect of the world, I think Bill Belichick's going to say, you know, that's just not happening. And it feels like there's a part of the way he's coming very, very soon. And, you know, where does he go if he goes anywhere? I mean, you know, he's not going to want to go to a rebuilding team. He's going to want to go to a team that's got a lot of talent with a chance to win. But I just don't see any openings. So it could be that this could be the end. Yay.
Thank God.
Well, it'll probably be like a bit like the Dan Marino end with Miami. I mean, there's that off season was sort of like we played our team or our front office played if the phone doesn't ring, it's me with him.
Yeah.
And you know, he eventually was just like, what gives? Like, I thought I'd be treated with a little bit more respect than this.
Mm-hmm. And let's hope they get spunked out of the playoffs 62-7 as well.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But and then Wayne Huizenga steps in, right, and he says, if Dan Marino wants to be on our team, Dan Marino is on our team.
And although Dan Marino, it was reported, got pretty upset and flirted with the idea of joining the Vikings.
He did. Offseason. He did. But he decided against that and decided, you know, just be weird to be in another team's uniform. I think he would have liked to actually play for Pittsburgh. I think that's – so we've always – I've been talking a long time about the Tom Brady leaving the Patriots this year, but I don't know if he's – I see him on another team. Like, no, it's just going to be a retirement probably, right?
It could be. I think but what I do see – is Bill Belichick going out to buy a quarterback and trying to win one without Tom Brady as his drop the mic moment? Maybe a Matthew Stafford, maybe a Derek Carr. You know, maybe there's a move.
Good luck winning the Super Bowl with either of those two.
But yeah, maybe right. Bill Belichick has the ego to maybe try. You know what I mean?
Teddy Bridgewater or something like that.
Something like that. Like he might have it because I don't think a rookie. I don't think Bill Belichick is really into going to get a rookie and going through those pains at this age. You know what I mean?
It'll be Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah. Or Ryan Tannehill.
Or Ryan Tannehill.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? Something like that. I do see something like that for Bill Belichick.
Did you see that yesterday? That game yesterday makes him only the second quarterback in NFL history to have five straight games with passer rating over 130, 135.
yeah, right now Ryan Tannehill is at 118.
Only him and Aaron Rodgers are the only two quarterbacks in history to have a five-game stretch or a four-game stretch, one of the two, with a passer rating over 135.
I like the bit of revenge that he got on Maurice Hurst. I don't know if you guys saw
that. Oh, man. That was – what a hit.
I saw it finally. That was brutal. He really laid the wood on him.
And then he smacks Maurice Hurst. Remember, Maurice Hurst is the one that got him spiraling toward his injury-plagued season last year.
The first injury, which they wouldn't acknowledge before the real injury that, you know, the real bad one.
Yeah, but they're showing what we kind of always knew. You give him a running game and you have him in play action, he's going to do things for you.
Yeah.
And that's all they do. They run the ball and they run play action, and he's super efficient in play action. And all of a sudden, those wide receivers are all pretty damn good.
AJ Brown looks seriously good.
Yes, he's really, really good.
He's completed like at least 77% of his passes in, it looks like, five of his eight games.
And what is he, six? Is he 6-1? Or
yeah, he's 6-1.
Yeah.
Good for him.
He has started seven games, and it's all
big game this weekend.
It's all right in front of him. They play Houston twice, and they have identical records with the Houston Texans. So, you want the division?
Go beat Houston. Keep going, Tannehill. Keep going, because we have the Houston pick.
There's not that many teams that are hotter than the Titans are at the moment in terms of you know, just winning.
Yeah, and that's a. That's a Bill Belichick spinoff right there for everybody that says that the Belichick tree is crap, and you know that's Mike Vrabel. Yeah. So,
yeah, who would ever thought that Tannehill, when he doesn't score 30 points, is a disappointment? Because he's scored 30 points, I think, five straight games already.
Yeah, they're the highest scoring team in the league over the past since he came in.
Yes, he is, and the top passer rated team, and they have the most touchdowns also, and they have the second leading rusher in the NFL.
Is it bittersweet for you boys?
You know what? I'm kind of enjoying it. You know,
just mostly bitter.
No, I'm kind of enjoying it. I understand it was time to go. It was just time to go. You know, we weren't going to hold on to him forever.
We got a fifth round pick for him. He's a tearing
fourth
up
round
the league.
Pick, dude. We got a fourth, round, fourth pick. Round.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, fourth round pick. Plus, we had to eat like we had to chew up $7 million. Yeah. I mean, that's for a guy that's on his way. I mean, if he plays for the last three games the way he's played in these other games, let's be honest, he is a candidate for MVP.
Yes,
in the league, right? Yeah. I mean, so a quarterback, take off the homer, you know, the Miami Dolphins fan, you know, pretend you're a fan of the Bills and you just relish in the Dolphins sucking and something like that. You're watching a team that just traded an MVP quarterback to another team in the AFC for a fourth round pick while having to eat $7 million. There's nothing good there. There's nothing. Right. There's no sweet in there. I mean, I'm happy for Ryan Tannehill too. I mean, I get that. Yeah. But there's no sweet there. That's just bitter. That's like watching Evan Mathis be on our roster for, you know, part of a year and then go off and then become an all-pro for like six straight years.
Would it bother you if he went to the playoffs and beat New England in New England?
No, I'd love it.
Okay. Well, that's different.
I would enjoy the hell out of that. Okay.
I'd enjoy that.
I'd love it. And
we all can enjoy that.
Reports of the weekend that he's going to get a fairly significant deal from the Titans.
Yeah.
that's hilarious.
I could
for him.
I can't help but think they're falling for it. There's something in the back of my – I can't help but think that. Like they're eating the cheese.
You got to think about it this way, okay? They're either falling for it or they're signing a Hall of Fame quarterback. Okay.
Well, I mean, but Nick Foles did this for a year too.
Yes,
right?
He did. Yes, he did.
And partway into the year, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Yeah,
Kirk Cousins
signed him
is doing it this year, by the way.
Yeah. Well, the Jags signed him for a big contract based on past success and spurts, right? These spurts that Nick Foles has had, and now they're already like they're back to Minshew mania. They're like, nah, Foles, just go away.
The fascinating thing is that he is. Looks significantly. I mean, I've seen most of the last five games. He looks significantly better in the pocket. He is accurate to a absolute fault at all three levels: short, intermediate, and deep. Most of all, everything he puts up just seems to land. He couldn't place it better into people's hands than he is doing it. He's building up a great relationship with Brown and with Davis, and he's got, you know, it's a good offensive line and Derrick Henry. You know, I think he's had five straight 100-yard games as well. So, you know, the offense is really clicking.
We have always known that he's super accurate, though, right?
I mean, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, you could get down on him all you want, but you cannot criticize the consistency with the way he throws the ball, the accuracy, because he gets it there. He gets it
and
where he wants
strength,
it to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the arm strength.
You kind of feel a little bit like this is what was happening in the build-up to that Calais Campbell knee injury in that game.
Yes,
you kind of feel like the arc looks a bit the same. This was the guy that we felt like he was developing into when he got injured on that, you know, when we had that great run that ended up in the playoffs. This is the quarterback that we felt didn't have the operation, had the knee injury, struggled to come back, struggled with everything last year. Sure. And now 2 years, what was it, 2 years on from the injury, and he's back and he looks phenomenal. I mean, he looks fantastic.
And you also wonder, I mean, if a big part of the problem, if he really was this sort of MVP class quarterback, you know, what was the problem here? And you have to look at it and be like, Gase really was that much of a problem.
Gase, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. In 2016, it was pretty good. And then sort of as Adam Gase, you know, devolved into himself a little bit even more. It just became worse and worse.
Let's be a little bit more poetic. As he deteriorated into madness.
Yeah, I mean, well, and chemical-induced madness, maybe. But, yeah, I think it was probably Adam Gase that was a big problem for him. And now maybe we're seeing something different. But also, I mean, there's just part of me that's like, you watch – you're going to sign him a big deal. The next year, there's going to be something going on with your team, and it's just not clicking again. And, you know, I don't know, but I'm not there yet, but I'm happy for him.
Yeah. The bottom should fall out eventually. Yeah. All right. Well, we had a championship weekend, and all these quarterbacks, you know, their final auditions before the bowl games that nobody really cares about. And, of course, the national championship series. What did you see, Simon, that even caught your eye? Because, to be honest with you, I was just thoroughly disappointed with everybody. Save Joe Burrow, who's going to win the Heisman, and he's going to be the first overall pick. So he doesn't really figure in our conversation.
I think the most impressive thing, and I think the team that everybody's sleeping on is Clemson. I think that Trevor Lawrence has not thrown an interception since the first or second week of October in the first quarter against Louisville. He is performing at a level significantly better now than he was when he won the national championship last year. And I think that team is, I mean, they are the number five ranked team in defense in the nation. I think they're number one in overall defense. Mm. I think they're five against the run, three against the pass. And whilst they don't have the caliber of players that, you know, the individuals, Cleveland Ferrell and Wilkins and Trayvon Mullen and Dexter Lawrence, I think they have a better team, a better unit, led obviously by Isaiah Simmons, who won the Buckus at the weekend, but with, you know, AJ Terrell and Xavier Thomas and those guys and Kayvon Wallace and Tanner Muse. And you just look at that skill position. You know, first of all, you look at the offensive line with Savinka at center and John Simpson, a really good left guard. Mm. You know, they're one of the best offensive lines in the country. But, you know, T. Higgins, phenomenal game against Virginia. Justin Ross, we all know how good he is. You know, you go down, DeAndre Overton, Amari Rodgers, they got the two freshmen, Frank Ladson Jr. and the other kid whose name escapes me, Travis Etienne. Mm. I mean, that team's going to be really, really hard to beat. And you look at a team like Ohio State, when have they really, really been in trouble? They were a little bit in trouble, down 14-0 against Wisconsin, but came back on the fake punt and that kind of got them back in the game. But that was early. I mean, that was, you know, they weren't in a fourth quarter battle. They've not, you know, that Clemson team is battle-tested, especially with Lawrence. I mean, Lawrence is the best pure passing quarterback in college football. I don't have any doubt of that. I thought Burrow played brilliantly for LSU, but Georgia were awful. So many drop passes, but I thought Jake Fromm didn't have a very good game. Defensively, they didn't play very well. Obviously, the injury to DeAndre Swift was huge.
I think you're being kind. Mm-hmm. I think Jake Fromm looked incompetent. He didn't look like a...
I think he stays in school. I would be very surprised if he comes out now.
I think he stays in school, but that's strong language to use. I mean, for the beginning of the game, he kicks off the beginning of the game with dimes dropping all over the place to the receivers that they can't catch any of them. And then from there, it just all kind of snowballed. Everybody's allowed to have an okay to bad game every now and then.
I think he struggled a little bit down the stretch.
He did. It got worse. Yeah. It started out good for him, but it wasn't good on the field. It didn't translate into points.
I thought Fields played very well. And, I think Oklahoma were lucky. And it really, it's three teams plus Oklahoma. You know, and actually, what was biblically bad about that team last year was that defense. Now, actually, I think they're the 22nd. I think they've jumped like 82 places in the rankings.
Yeah.
The defensive coordinator they got from Ohio State has done a great job. Kenneth Murray is a great player. Gallimore, the defensive tackle, is a really good player. And that actually looks like the strength of the team, because the last couple of weeks, they've really struggled to move the ball offensively. Jalen Hurts has become a turnover machine. He fumbled, you know, interceptions. You know, Baylor really shut them down completely. They're really struggling to run the ball. Trey Sermon has barely played the last few weeks. Obviously, CeeDee Lamb is still there, but I think LSU will shut down or shut Oklahoma down, and I wouldn't be surprised if Clemson beat Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl, setting up a Joe Burrow versus Trevor Lawrence battle for the national championship. But I think Clemson are a team that you should really be fearing. I think that's a very smart team with a superstar quarterback.
Do we know the first round matchups?
Yeah, it's LSU against Oklahoma and Ohio State against Clemson.
And oddly enough, Clemson is the 3 seed.
Yeah, I mean, the question about Clemson is who have they beaten this season? They actually haven't beaten a team that ended up in the top 25, apart from Virginia, who are 24th.
Yeah, I thought the North Carolina had a good football team. They proved me wrong. They're not very good.
They had the same game last year against Syracuse. Don't you forget? Don't remember they had the game against Syracuse last year where they won right at the end of the game when Lawrence got knocked out of the game and the backup came in and scored the touchdown and the 2-point conversion. They won the game. It was the same thing in Chapel Hill against North Carolina. They had the blip, and then since then they've just been blowing teams away. I mean, 62-17 against Virginia. I mean, that was not a contest at all. And they just looked absolutely dominant. I would be very, if I was Ryan Day and Ohio State, I'd be very fearful of what's to come. But I mean, what a matchup that's going to be. T. Higgins and Justin Ross against Jeff Okuda and Sean Wade and Damon Arnett. And, you know, that's going to be a hell of a game.
You know, I do wonder about, I recognize LSU is probably going to the championship and it's going to be LSU, probably Clemson, maybe. I mean, but that first matchup with Oklahoma, I go back to the Texas game that LSU had where Texas actually got a lot done on offense. And it makes me wonder, like, because the way that Oklahoma offense works is they haven't been playing well lately, but when they get on and they get on a roll, they really steamroll, right? I mean, that's the way they work. And
Lincoln, you know, Riley, Dave Aranda, Lincoln Riley has his knack, which I think all the great coordinators have it also, where you could tell that they're running the same five plays and a couple of variations off of those same five plays, but you still can't stop them. You know what I mean?
But, I mean, and Dave Aranda, you know, his defense faced in Texas, and, you know, Texas was able to get things done, and that's, you know.
They've given up 35 points four times this season. You know, and they gave it, 620 odd yards against Ole Miss. I mean, that freshman quarterback had 220 yards rushing.
Yeah. Four touchdowns. Oh yeah, absolutely.
And the zone read that really killed, you know, they've had their moments where they've really been able to not been able to shut down.
I mean, you know, Sam Ellinger threw for 400 yards and four touchdowns, zero interceptions against them. And he also put on 60 yards rushing with another touchdown. So yeah, five touchdowns Sam Ellinger did.
And it's fascinating when you look at, you know, Vincent and Delpit at safety. Vincent so quick, Delpit obviously stud, and then Fulton and Stingley, who had another two fantastic picks against Georgia, you know, just to cement his incredible season. But they're still giving up yardage in the air. And like I said, you know, Jalen Hurts is the kind of quarterback that could hurt them if they can get that zone read going, because, you know, they have struggled at times with, you know, that kind of option quarterback look with the RPOs and those reads that Hurts does so well. You just hope that he doesn't take so many hits. I mean, he just takes just way too many hits for a quarterback.
Yeah. Whenever I hear that, you know, Oklahoma, it's sort of like three teams plus Oklahoma lucky to be here, I always think of that too, because like, it's like, yeah, even though I recognize that Oklahoma is kind of a weak fourth one to add into here, but they're also a team that could really sneak up on one of these teams, I think, and just, you know, before you know it, you've lost the game because they just laid on 53 points on you or something like that. It's going to be an interesting matchup. I think it's going to be fun. And it's going to be a good test for Joe Burrow to keep that that offense high octane the way they have been, LSU, and keep it up, even if, you know, Oklahoma does start to get on a roll. Like, if they do get on a roll.
By the way, Joe Burrow did have one of the plays of the year in that game against Georgia.
Yeah.
That was insane. Where he escaped two sacks, then rolled out to the right, then throws it back across his body, completes it, and it's a race to the end zone. So, yeah, no, I agree with both of you. I think Clemson is the best team out of the four, I think. And basically because of their experience being there before. And I would favor them right now, which is strange that they're the 3 seed. I don't get that. Like, you know, but you know, I guess they go with that strength of schedule and they haven't beaten anybody. So
yeah, I mean, you look at who LSU have beaten.
They're peaking
as well
at the right time.
Yeah,
it's hard to argue with who LSU have beaten. You know, Texas, Alabama, Florida, Auburn, Texas A&M, Georgia. You know, that's pretty unmatched. But Dabo hasn't lost a game since the end of the 2017 season.
No.
And Trevor Lawrence equally hasn't lost a game since the end of the 2017 season when he got knocked out by Blessed Trinity in the semifinals of the Georgia State Championship. So these dudes do not recognize losing.
No, they don't. Well, all right, Chris, as Simon has to jet because it's getting kind of late, where he's at. On Friday night, Oregon played Utah for the Pac-12 championship, and Justin Herbert, front and center. Another high-profile game. His team gets it done. So you got to say that he got it done. But you saw some red flags, as so did I. What did you see on that game Friday night?
Well, it's the usual stuff for Justin Herbert. You know, his success is streaky and inconsistent, and I think it's in part because he consistently fails at some aspect of the game on not every play, but most plays. And you kind of, as you stack it all up, there's so many things that a quarterback has to do completely perfectly on a play to execute it well, from a ball placement standpoint and timing and you know, execution of the action in the backfield and pre-snap, setting protections. I mean, just basically everything. And you ask for perfection from these guys, and there's so many different ways that you can fail. And he manages to show something, even if the play is ultimately successful, he manages to show something that kind of flags you on most plays. And what that means is that the success ends up being streaky and inconsistent. So he was very successful early on in that game, and then second half he started to not be successful, and that's what you noticed. And so overall, let's give him some credit. He finished up the year with a good record, a good passing record. He had like a 160 or nearly a 160 NCAA passer rating. He did a good job overall, I think, for the year, and he had the year that he needed to have. He finished in the top, you know, 15 of passer ratings for the year, and he did a good job. But I still continue to have nitpicks with him, and I wonder about him as a top pick.
Yeah, and now his team moves on to the Rose Bowl, but we don't know who they'll play. They'll play, I guess, Wisconsin, because is that what's going to happen? Yeah, they're playing Wisconsin in the Rose in the Rose Bowl. So I guess that's a game that we're going to want to watch, because Wisconsin seems to play really well in all these bowl games. They have a streak going on. I think they've won 5 in a row. So I guess we want to see them play again there, but the big red flag for me was that third quarter, as Utah came thundering back with 15 consecutive points. He never really did anything to stem the tide. And at one point, he was 0 for 8 throwing the football. And there was a couple of three and outs in there too. And you were pointing out that Utah does have a pretty good defense. But, you know, make a play, man. You're the superstar quarterback. You know, make a throw that extends a drive and stops the bleeding. Now, evidently, they didn't really need it, because they scored 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, put the game away.
That's the other thing. I mean, if you look at what happened in the game.
Yes. So, yeah, it was a bad third quarter, but he did manage to put together 2 drives in the fourth quarter that iced the game. Mm-hmm. So, you got to give him credit for that. But, yeah, I do want to see him play well against Wisconsin.
I question his accuracy. I mean, he's not an accurate quarterback. He doesn't have very good aim, in my opinion.
I think he has great ideas when he's playing. He just doesn't have the skill to execute those ideas.
Well, I mean, he completes a lot of passes, and he's got like something like a 66% completion, or I forget what it is exactly. But it's not – I mean, listen, Tim Tebow had the same completion percentage when he was playing at Florida. He was not an accurate quarterback. No. Justin Herbert, and there was a stat that was pulled up by Sports Info Solutions, I believe, not too long ago, that Justin Herbert has the highest share of completions that are due to screens, that are on screens of any of the quarterbacks out there. It's like over 30% of his completions, and that's what I keep seeing in these games. You know, when I see he led his team back, and he showed great poise and stuff like that, I was like, he completed screens, man. And the screens went for touchdown. There are other good throws, and trust me, this guy's got a beautiful arm.
Yes,
and he's got a great, you know, he's big, he's strong, he can run. I mean, he's everything that you want that way, and he's supposed to be, you know, a very intelligent guy. I think some people kind of question whether he's a football manic kind of asset to a franchise. But, you know, I try to be easy on guys that way. Just don't be Don't be a criminal. You know, don't be don't be psychotic in some way. Don't be fat. You know, and threatening to get big and out of shape. And yeah, I mean,
I think that's a debate for another time, because you know he is coming out, so I think
we're
gonna have to debate it, because he's gonna stare us right in the face where we're gonna be picking.
Yes, he is.
Between fourth and seventh.
We're going to have this debate.
I think we have to debate this. Do we want the big personality, like a Tua, who shows up at a frat party and decides to start throwing the die, okay, and walks around town in his pajamas, all right? And you watch him in a, you know, he looks like the type of guy, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't drink. He's kind of religious, but he looks like the kind of guy that you're like, you know what? I want to go to a bar with this guy and raise some hell. Because he has the big smile. He can talk in an interview, you know. And then you move on and you have Russell Wilson, who's kind of a nerd. But you see he's kind of gregarious. And Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, you know, has a supermodel wife. We kind of see a pattern. Lamar Jackson is the king of the press conference now. So we're kind of seeing a pattern of these guys that are these big personalities.
I don't know. I think we see patterns when we want to see patterns. I think that really there are these guys that are all cut from different cloths. They all act different ways. I mean, Aaron Rodgers was thrown out of the process by the San Francisco 49ers because Mike Nolan thought he came off like a jerk and he's never going to be coachable. Right. I mean, but that's the way it goes. Like they're all different personalities. They're all cut from different cloths. And that's why I try to be forgiving. Like there's no one way that they're built. There are some guys that are, I mean, look at the success. We just went on and on waxing poetic about how Tannehill is doing it as an MVP in Tennessee this year. Well, what personality did he have? Did he have a big personality? Did he have
pretty quiet. He was a quiet.
No, he's a very quiet. He's very private too. You know, I think that they're all built different, and that's why I try to be forgiving. It's like, you know, listen, just don't be a psycho, and don't be lazy. You cannot be lazy at that position. Just absolutely not. You can't have an eating problem. You can't, because we've seen guys that just, you know, can't keep themselves in shape. And then don't be a criminal, you know?
Yeah.
I'm fine. Yeah,
and to be fair, some of that is also for show, because, you know, Drew Brees is known to be pretty private, and he's also boisterous. Patrick Mahomes had an absolute shit fit on the sideline on Friday. And after he blew a gasket and screamed for about 15 minutes, his offense produced 3 points the rest of the half. So, right.
I mean,
you know, like, what help did that do? You know what I mean?
I think they're all different. And I do think that there can be positives when you see a guy that's just, you know, this natural born leader and stuff like that. I don't want to take anything away from that. But I mean, I'm not going to knock a guy out of the process because, you know, I hear some weird things about him, as long as he's not going to be sending up major red flags that way. It's really just about the field for him, and is he accurate enough, because the ball placement on him consistently comes off wrong, shoulder low, high, you know, stuff like that. And then he misses, like, the qual there's missing, and then there's missing, right? You know, when you miss, you don't want to be missing by like 10 yards or something like that, or throwing it way out of bounds or something. You know, that shows that there's an aim problem. And and I think that he does. If you look at the comparison between he and Jacob Eason, it's actually really interesting, because Jacob Eason, to me, even though he has a lower completion percentage, is an unqualified more accurate passer than Justin Herbert is. Absolutely 1,000% more accurate passer. That doesn't mean he's going to be a better quarterback. I don't know that. I don't know what how hard he works and the makeup and the stuff that we were just talking about. I don't know if he can avoid pressure, if he's got the same athleticism, you know, the same knack that these guys, they all have some kind of special it factor, something that's more dangerous for them than just about anybody else. And that's how they hurt defenses. We'll see if Jacob Eason has that too, and he'll go through the sandblaster if and when he comes out. But Justin Herbert, I don't know. I'm not there. But I will say this. I mean, Drew Locke is lightening up, right?
Absolutely. And I was about to bring him up. you know.
That's a vote in favor of Justin Herbert to me.
Do you think it's a vote for Justin Herbert or a vote
absolutely
for Jacob Eason?
They were like the
quarterback that does stupid
like
things.
Same person. Last year they were the same person in college football.
Although like Drew Lock likes to talk, and if you saw his his celebration yesterday, he was laser blasting Houston Texans. Okay,
yeah.
On the field.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he was. So and he was doing.
Well, they have the same arm. They have the same athleticism. They have the same ability to run RPOs. Although
they do have different personalities.
I mean, they have a little bit different personality, but there was definitely always questions about how much Drew Lock cares about it.
Yeah,
and there have been consistent questions about how much Drew Lock cares about it and whether he's got it too much. And why do you think he was always compared to Jay Cutler? Mm-hmm. You know, and so. Yeah, I think and I think those same questions come out about Justin Herbert as well. There's no question about Herbert's intelligence level, right? I mean, he's known as kind of a brainy guy. I don't know whether – is that real or is that perceived? I mean, with Josh Rosen, I always kind of felt like that braininess was more perception than reality. But
yeah, because
with,
he has maturity, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. So
he can have a conversation.
He thinks, you know, he's got a world view. That's not the same thing as intelligence. No. But I think that Justin Herbert is known as a brainy guy to his team. And he's grown into being a leader with them. It was hard going for him to do that. And Simon brings that up a lot. But yeah, he and Drew Lock are very similar, and Drew Lock was the same way. It was you know, play after play after play. Well, yeah, the play was successful, but you know, where was your ball placement on that? Where was your timing timing on that one? Why did you miss this guy, or why did you miss this opening over here? Why did you know it was just constantly there's something. It's, and even if the play is successful, you saw the trait. It was there, but he's coming to the NFL. He sat for a while. He got injured. They definitely slow walked him through this process. They didn't try and throw him out there right away. And he's coming out there. He's the talent will out. The talent is, you know, and that's what's showing right
and
now.
If you're reading, and if you're reading some of the Bronco beat writers, they're writing things today like John Elway did it. He found the quarterback of the future.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's a vote in favor of Herbert.
Yeah. And if you watch that game against the Texans, he eviscerated the Houston Texans. And trust me, it's hard to outshine Deshaun Watson. Well, Drew Lock did.
Okay. That's also a vote in favor of Jordan Love.
Yes, it is.
Really.
Absolutely. So, I think Drew Lock is more Jordan Love than Justin Herbert.
He could be. That could be fair.
Because they both have the big arm, and they both are capable of doing the dumbest things imagined.
Right. No, that's true. That's fair.
Because that's what I always saw from Drew Lock. What I always saw from Drew Lock was three throws that made me say, this guy's a first rounder. And then the fourth throw, I would say, okay, no. I don't want this guy nowhere near my team. But
there's there's a little bit of a gunslingerness that that was part of Drew Lock's game that is the one thing that I wouldn't compare to Herbert, probably. Mm-hmm. It is more like you said, it is more like a Jordan Love. It's definitely a vote in favor. I think it's a vote in favor of both Love and Herbert. To see the guy with the big talent come out after having been coached up for a little bit, come out and be hot in the NFL. That's a vote in favor of talent. But on the flip side of the coin, we've got, you know, the Gardner Minshews of the world or of the NFL and, you know, some other guys that don't have great arm talent that are also having a moment.
Yes.
So what, you know, what do you take from that? What do you take?
Yeah, if you watched Jacksonville, the worst mistake they ever made was after they lost those two games, benching Minshew for Nick Foles.
Right.
They've gone absolutely backwards.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't.
They've gotten killed those two games. That
Daniel Jones has had a few moments this year too, and he doesn't have the big arm as we talked about. And so what do you take from that? I don't know. But there's votes in favor of all these guys. What I take from it is that, I mean, first off, Jake Fromm is going back to school. Yes. Jordan Love, rumors a swirl about Jordan Love, just graduate transfer. He's a graduate. He's going he can transfer without taking a year off. And now he might, he's got so much talent, he might have his pick. I mean, Oklahoma might have they might be okay with that Rattler guy, but who knows? You know, at the same time, there's talk about him possibly going to Texas Tech. I mean, could you imagine him going to LSU and taking over for Joe Burrow?
Yes.
You know, that
that's what makes the most sense to me.
He's got his pick, right? So so he could go back to school and, you know, look to have a good year and then come out in 2021. The demand, if the supply is there, the demand is going to be there. So I wouldn't worry about Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields too much if you're Jordan Love, because first off, you have the talent to compete with those guys. And second, if there are five first round quality quarterbacks, you know, in a draft, they will all go in the first round. The teams with the need will show up all of a sudden. And especially there's the replacement cycle in this NFL is, it's got to begin, because we got Big Ben, you got Tom Brady, you got Phil Rivers, you got Drew Brees. These guys are ancient. Aaron Rodgers is not getting any younger.
Don't look in your rearview mirror, Dolphin fans, but the Detroit Lions are hard charging for your pick.
Yeah, I mean, that's so – I think that the – you know, we'll see what happens with the Detroit Lions. But, yeah, the demand springs up if the quarterback – so all these quarterbacks like, oh, I would – the people say I would come out in 2020, because you don't want to be in the 2021 draft with Trevor Lawrence and all them. It's like, listen, if you're one of those guys, you're going to go in the first round. The demand is gonna happen all of a sudden, because all these guys are going to get retired. Forcibly, and so that's what you'll see in 2021. But I think Jake Fromm's going back, and I think Jordan Love, I think I would say 50-50 to maybe even more of a chance that he goes back and transfers. And then of course Tua Tagovailoa, that's really up in the air, because he could stay in school and either take not play and just kind of be a player coach, or maybe he does play and just plays enough to show that he's back from the hip injury, and then all of a sudden he's got a lot more money in his pocket. So you know, watch out. All of our best laid plans, the Miami Dolphins, their best laid plans at quarterback, just evaporate, and because Joe Burrow is clearly not an option either.
No.
So what do you do?
Like a lock.
What do you do? You put the poll out there today. You put the poll out there, and you're like Matthew Stafford or Derek Carr. Or,
well, Matthew Stafford's a runaway winner in that poll.
Well, yeah, but I think you put Tannehill in there, even though we know that's not happening. Tom Brady, I mean, is that really going to happen? Is Tom Brady going to put on a different uniform and it
be the appeal.
Dolphins
it's the
uniform?
Appeal. It's the appeal. Tom Brady knows the staff. We're going to spend a lot of money. I can see the scenario where Tom Brady feels completely disrespected, eyeballs the Dolphins and says, wait a minute. I have to beat the Bills and the Jets, and then I got to beat the Patriots one out of two times to have a realistic shot at a real fuck you. You know what I mean? To Bill Belichick, sign me up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just don't see that.
I could see that happening.
I don't think he goes somewhere. I don't think he goes somewhere to be a cellar dweller. And the Dolphins are one of the worst teams in the league. And no matter how much money they have, you don't fix everything in one off season just because you got some money in picks. And especially this staff with this philosophy, they don't do that. Okay. They don't go out there and just buy, you know, a bunch of high priced stuff. That's not them. That's the thing that people keep missing when they're like, oh, we got a huge budget. We got a bunch of money and stuff like that. No, that's not them. It's just not their makeup. So I'd be very surprised if they do that. Is Tom Brady really going to come here to do that? I do not think so. I think there's not much of a chance. If anything, maybe they'll try and revisit the Teddy Bridgewater thing and see, you know, if they can make that happen. But you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel. I brought up Marcus Mariota because it's like, well, that may be what you're faced with.
I just don't want the guy that Ryan Tannehill – benched, okay?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes magic happens and, you know, it's just you can't explain it. But
yeah, the winner of that trade, the winner of that poll is a runaway. It's Matt Stafford with 46%. It's
Stafford. But you have to ask this question. I asked this question. Listen.
And that poll already has 1,300 votes in 3 hours. So
Matt Patricia and Brian Flores, very similar, cut from the same cloth, right? So Matt Patricia is going to decide that Matthew Stafford is not his guy. Mm-hmm. And Brian Flores is going to decide that Matthew Stafford is his guy. Why is that? Why is Matt Patricia going to dump Stafford in favor of whichever quarterbacks are left to draft? The
argument for it is his salary, which is not crazy.
His salary is only $21 million. So that's a vote in favor of.
Right.
I mean, this is two-sided. Detroit's looking at that and they're like, yeah, we'll keep that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The votes in favor are his salary, which are reasonable, and the way he was playing this year when he got hurt. He was having an MVP type season when he got hurt. So
why would Patricia get rid of him?
Exactly. That's what, you know, I struggle with that.
Well, if he does decide to get rid of him, more like I could see him decide to get rid of him, but if he does decide to get rid of him, why on the flip side does Brian Flores go ahead and say, yeah, I want him, even though Matt Patricia doesn't, you know what, you know what I mean? Like, Matt Patricia's going to say, I'm going to get rid of him. I'm going to get rid of him. And I'm going to go for, I don't know who's going to be left at quarterback in this draft at this point, Jacob Eason or something like that. Mm. So he's going to say, that's my guy. And
Herbert, they're going to be picking right behind us.
Or Herbert. Okay, so let's say it's Herbert. So Matt Patricia says, Matthew Stafford's not my guy, Justin Herbert is. And Brian Flores, who has enough draft position to get Justin Herbert if he wants, says, no, I don't want Justin Herbert. I want Matthew Stafford. I don't get that. That's what I don't get. Mm-hmm. Why do they end up on opposite sides of that?
Yeah.
Because they don't have – I mean, they're very similar – I think they're very similar. They're both out of the same, you know, team structure and the same philosophies and stuff like that. So I have a hard time seeing them on opposite sides of that trade.
Yeah, I tend to agree. But, you know, it's near the off season, so we got to make polls. And this one's evidently pretty popular. It's going to get a ton of votes. You know, I love that I threw Ryan Tannehill in there. Ryan Tannehill has 23% of the vote right now. Which is all kinds of ridiculous.
That's fun.
Can you imagine this fan base if Ryan Tannehill came in for a free agent visit?
Oh my god, it'd be ridiculous. And you know what's funny about that is, like, Ryan Tannehill would be among, if you think about kind of philosophically, what personality I guess Brian Flores wants in his quarterback. It's not going to be like a Jameis Winston. It's more like Ryan Tannehill. Mm-hmm. And so Ryan Tannehill would be a candidate if they weren't the ones that just traded him for a fourth round pick.
yeah. Although I'm pretty sure that Ryan Tannehill, like, in, you know, deep down, he would love to be back here because he loves living in South Florida. Mm-hmm. But I think his pride is not going to allow him. Besides, he's going to sit down with, you know, the brass in Tennessee, and they're going to give him a big fat contract, and he gets to play over there, you know. And that's not too far from his home in Fort Lauderdale. You know, he could live in Tennessee for a couple of months out of the year and then just, you know, take a little car ride right back down to Fort Lauderdale and live in his big house.
I will say they treated him well on the outside. They found a good team for him. They worked with him. I mean, he was very grateful for the process. They did exactly what he wanted that way in terms of finding a team. And also, they even ate that $7 million to make it happen. So they treated him well on as an outgoing player. And so it would be kind of funny and interesting if a year later, like, Tennessee's trying to negotiate with him and they're not doing a very good job with it. And Miami swoops in and is like, you know, hey, what do you think? You know, and he's like, think? Well, I like Miami. You always treated me well. Uh-huh. You know, you treated me well on the outside. I didn't want to be part of this ridiculous rebuild that and this tank season that you were you know, because Miami was going to go through this tank season in 2019. So I don't think Tannehill really wanted to be part of that, just like many other players. So they'd be like, I understood, what you guys were doing, and I didn't really want to be there for that. But now you guys are in a different spot, and you guys always treated me well, and I like South Florida, so I'm coming back.
If just for the freak out, Dolphin Twitter.
Oh yeah,
it's worth the happening. Great.
The reactions would be wonderful.
Those reactions, they're gonna be insane.
I could live off those reactions for a year.
Absolutely. You know, and well, who knows? You know, he might be a Super Bowl champion come this.
Could happen to Laremy Tunsil too. Did he? He didn't get his contract yet.
No, he has not. And he he's not moving off his mountain where he wants to be the highest paid left tackle. So
sure. And after the year that we're having at that left tackle position, it's like,
yeah. So welcome back, Laremy Tunsil.
It is. Absolutely. It is pretty important, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So, yeah, Laremy Tunsil, absolutely welcome back whenever you
want to
come back.
We'll get the gang back together. What if we got Laremy Tunsil and Ryan Tannehill back after trading them for
picks? We get the band back together?
We get the band back together.
And let's go for it with a new coach.
With the picks, with the fourth-round pick and the two firsts. And was it two firsts and 2 seconds or two firsts and a second?
It was two firsts and a second.
Two firsts and a second. So, yeah, we get the band back together plus two firsts, a second, and a fourth.
Yes.
And maybe the Denver Broncos cut Juwan James at that point because
and we pick him up too.
And we get
and then
him
we
back.
Sign Kenyon Drake in free agency.
Oh man. Get the band just totally get the band back together.
And let's go for it. Let's go win the Super Bowl with the old guys.
Yeah. That'd be wonderful.
All right. We've evidently been talking for too long that we're approaching the subject of trying to re-sign everybody we've traded out of here.
Yeah, I know.
Although, notice but we didn't mention Minkah Fitzpatrick.
No. And that's fine. Like, he's the one that burned the bridge.
Yes.
Like, that one's gone. That's done.
But our listeners cannot complain.
Two micro points that I wanted to bring up, though, before we finish. Mm-hmm. Just things to think about. One, we talked about Isaiah Simmons on Clemson before. Think about him. Like trading up from one of our late first round picks and using Jerome Baker to trade up and go and get Isaiah Simmons with one of those picks to replace Jerome Baker so that you still have a guy with Jerome Baker's speed. Cause we've seen how important that speed can be. That Stephen Parker interception that you saw this weekend happened because Jerome Baker has such good speed that they could actually use him as they faked the A-gap blitz with him. And then had him pull out into like a Tampa 2 middle of field coverage.
Yeah.
Which is just like ridiculous. Like you got to be speedy to do that. But
he looks to do it.
Yeah, he did. But I mean the fake the A-gap blitz and then do it. So I think that so that's one you need that speed somewhere. And you also pointed out the play where in the fourth quarter on that last drive we tried to rotate in the coverage. We still pulled out and back into a seven-man coverage, but we tried to rotate the coverage over to have some corner blitzes come in as the third and fourth rushers, and they caught us on it with a little screen, and, you know, it ended up being a costly play. Well, the guy that prevented that from being a touchdown was Jerome Baker because he had the speed to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So the speed is important. Isaiah Simmons has that speed, but he's also a lot more rational for this defense because he's bigger, he's taller, he's stronger. And I think that, you know, maybe he could do the things up front and in the linebacker unit that Jerome Baker is struggling with, because overall he didn't have a great game, but his speed was still a useful tool. So think about that. The other thing to think about is the last three games we've gained 22, 26 and 22 first downs in these games. That's above league average. League average is like 21. So we've been above average that way in the last three games. And the thing that I noticed that's coincided with it is the fact that the offense has really come to rely on 12 personnel during those three games, which did not happen before in the games before. Mm-hmm. So two tight end personnel, 12 personnel. I know over the first two of those three games, they were the second most 12 oriented team in the league. Only the Philadelphia Eagles had used it more. And then I think in this game, I think they went ridiculous with it against the Jets. I think they used it even more than they had against the Browns and the Eagles. So So 12 personnel, like, going forward is becoming a thing, and it's working for them. So I think that's something to keep an eye on, whether that's some sort of revelation, and maybe it affects what they think going forward, because certainly we've seen the resurgence of Mike Gesicki, and we've seen, you know, now we're seeing some blocking success and some running success out of 12 personnel. They're actually gaining like 4 yards a carry out of 12 personnel on the ground, which for this offensive line is a friggin', you know, Herculean feat. So I just want to make those points because it's something to think about as we go forward.
Yeah, that is interesting. Although on your first point, I can't see myself trading assets to upgrade that position. Even though, you know, I love that player, but yeah, not that position. For a tackle, yes. For a quarterback, absolutely. For a corner,
that's one of the few that Bill Belichick paid, though, is Dont'a Hightower, because of his versatility.
That is
like true. There's very few on that defense that Bill Belichick would be like, yeah, we'll go ahead and pay that guy. There's Stephen Gilmore, of course, and Devin McCourty, because of his versatility. And then something that, like, that the versatility that Dont'a Hightower has really makes that defense go up front. And I think that that's that could be something that they could pay, they could value.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't complain, listeners. You got an extended podcast this week. You got everything, pretty much. You even got Tannehill talk. You even got us to start laying out a scenario where we put the entire band back together, minus Adam Gase, of course.
Oh, yeah. Most important part.
All right. That's it. There is no more. We will talk to you guys later this week.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.